Okay, today we want to we're going to continue with marriage tips. And one of the most important ingredients in marriage and in any relationship, also in raising children, is savlanut. Savlanut, which means patience. Patience, or savlanut. If you go to Israel and you're waiting in line, you're more than likely to hear this word. And they usually follow with a hand signal. Savlanut. Or when you're driving, the guy will stick his hand out the window and tell you, savlanut, patience. And in life, one of the major important ideas is savlanut, savlanut. And the root of the word savlanut is lisbol, or to bear a burden. Because a person with patience is really bearing. Or you tell someone, bear with me. Well, I'm busy right now, bear with me. So that's the source of the word savlanut, which is patience, is to bear the burden. Person's in a rush, and you try and slow them down. It's like a burden, it's weighing on them. So that's savlanut. Savlanut is, from the word lisbol, or a sabal. A sabal is a porter. He carries heavy weights around. So again, he's bearing weights. So that's all rooted in the same word of savlanut, which is patience. And patience is a very important ingredient in marriage, because we have to understand that marriage brings together two unique individuals. And some people, maybe you're more unique than others. Two unique individuals. Plus, they're of different genders. And we know there's a book, Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. So you got two different people coming together from two different worlds who can barely understand each other. It requires a tremendous amount of patience. There's a different emotional, spiritual makeup, and the needs are disparate. Then you have different kinds of education, different roles in life. So we find that one of the most important things is savlanut, is patience. Today, unfortunately, people don't have patience. It's very hard to have patience. And in some societies, more than others. Some societies is more patience, some societies less patience, depending on the society. I think it's dependent also on the weather. Usually the colder the weather, the more patience people have, maybe. That's my theory. I don't know if it's true or not.
Depends.
So it calms people down. It's cool, it's cold, calms people down. People have hotter kinds of personalities. They get more excited. They have less patience. And it's very important to have patience, especially with child raising. You raise children, the most important ingredient is patience. If you straight away start screaming, that's the end of all the good intentions of raising children properly. That's one of the worst things you can do, is start screaming. You need a lot of patience. You need a lot of repetition. The word the Torah uses to teach children is interesting. In the Shema, we say, Vishinantam levanecha. You will teach your children. What's Vishinantam? So the word lishanen means to repeat. Because that's probably the only mechanism we have of teaching children. They do something, and then you say, didn't I tell you not to do that 5 minutes ago? You have to repeat again. Don't do it. 5 minutes later, you got to repeat it again. The Torah says, that's the way they learn. That's the nature of the beast. Veshinantam, repetition over and over again. But that involves a lot of patience, of savlanut, of patience. And the same is true in marriage. In marriage, a person requires a lot of patience. You can't expect people to change overnight. And don't even forget about people exchanging. Don't even think about people changing. Don't get into a marriage thinking that, you know, I'm going to work on the other individual, they're going to change. It's much more possible to change oneself than change the others. It's much more possible to say, you know what, I'm going to work on being more patient. There's no other alternative. We have to work on ourselves in marriage. Who is the most patient? The Midrash says God is the most patient. How do we know? God waited 10 generations for Adam to Noah. For another righteous individual, Noah came along 10 generations later. Then he waits another 10 generations from Noah to Abraham. For 10 generations, he's waiting. One generation, two generations. Nothing good, nothing doing. Wait, 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 Abraham. He waits 6 more generations for Moses. So all this is patience. God is teaching us patience. We're waiting for the Messiah. Patience. There's no rush. You know, people want a bigger rush. They're usually in a rush for their own devices. They're usually in a rush because they want a better life. But we have to think about Hashem's plan. Everything has a plan. Hashem is patient. And that's something we have to work on, is patience. And that's one of the keys to success in marriage, is patience. Number two, we have to realize marriage is a partnership. It's a partnership. And a successful marriage is a learning process. And it becomes viable when the members view themselves as partners in an undertaking. So it's like a partnership. You have business with a partnership. You have two partners. This one wants to do this, one wants to do that. You have to come to some mutual agreement. A marriage is a partnership. And it's an undertaking where a person sometimes has to yield to the other partner. So partnership involves yielding sometimes to the other partner. And if a person enters the marriage with the idea of self-gratification, with an agenda of, I'm in this for me, it's doomed to failure. The person's going to go into marriage knowing it's a partnership. There's give and take. But a person's going to realize, sometimes I'm going to give. And especially in times where there's a sickness or there's other things. And unfortunately, sometimes it's out of our control. He's going to realize, I'm getting married with the best intentions. I want someone who's going to provide for me. The person's got a great job. 3-4 years later, that person loses their job. But I married you for the job! So what happened now? So it's out of our control. Some things are out of control. Person wants to marry the most healthy person in the world. A couple of years later, the person gets sick. It's out of our control. All these things are out of control. But we have to realize marriage is for better or for worse. It's things which are out of our control. And it's a partnership, a giving partnership. So should a person enter the marriage with a single goal of self-gratification, it's doomed to failure. Marriage is a partnership, a common venture, in which both parties must continue to invest, with dividends yet to come. The dividends are going to come. There's plenty of chairs over here. Dividends yet to come. So that's how we should view marriage. It's a partnership. I don't see dividends straight away. The dividends are going to come. And who are the dividends? Hopefully the children, grandchildren. Those are the dividends yet to come. The fruits of the marriage. And a person has to fashion themselves into a giver rather than a taker. And that's the hard part of marriage, is changing ourselves. As Hillel says, "Im ein ani li, mi li." If I am not for myself, who is for me? First priority is ourselves. V'mani l'atzmi, but if I am only for myself, ma'ani, what am I? Become a very selfish individual. There's a balance over here. And marriage is one of the vehicles for a person to start thinking about someone else instead of themselves. That's why it's so hard today to get married. People don't want to get married. Why? It's me. Why do I need to get someone? Why do I need to worry about someone else? Why do I need to bother about someone else? And the answer is, bothering about someone else causes a person to become a different person. From being a me individual to becoming a giving individual. From becoming a taker to becoming a giver. That's the importance of marriage. That's why the Torah says, get married. Because we want you to work on yourself. We want you to grow as an individual. Marriage enables a person to grow as an individual. Just like a parent grows as an individual. The giver always grows. The giver is the one who grows all the time. And we want to transform ourselves from being a taker to a giver. And that's really the key of the bar mitzvah and the bat mitzvah. It is the process of a kid from becoming a taker, from being a taker, to transforming themselves into a giver. That takes a process of 12 to 13 years in Jewish law. The process of changing from a taker into a giver is a process which takes a lot of time, between 12 and 13 years. And a marriage involves obligations and responsibilities. And it's interesting because the Torah focuses on the obligations of a man to his wife. Torah says, three things. She'era, ksuta, v'onata, lo tigra. Do not reduce her food, clothing, and marital relations. The man's obligation to his wife is food, clothing, marital relations. And everything else around it, surrounding it. The Torah does not talk explicitly of the obligations of a woman to a husband. What's going on over here? It's very totally imbalanced in favor of the woman. Why is that? And the answer is because the Torah was written 3,300 years ago. and it emphasizes the rights of those who were normally trodden on. So the Torah emphasizes the rights of the slaves. It doesn't talk about the free men. Rights of the slaves. The Torah emphasizes the rights of the orphan and the widow. And emphasizes the rights of the woman as opposed to the rights of the man. Rights of the man you don't have to write about. Everyone knew about the rights of the man. But when the Torah writes about it is the rights of the woman, that's revolutionary. That's new age. That's what the Torah did 3,300 years ago. And so there's three obligations in mentioned explicitly in the Torah. The Rambam, in his section on marriage, lists seven more obligations that a man has to his spouse from the rabbis. So together, man has 10 obligations to his wife. And then the rabbi said there are four obligations a woman has to her husband. So you can imagine, look at that. 10 obligations a man to his wife, and four obligations of a wife to her husband. And that's probably the reason is because in those days abuse was common from the man to the woman, and therefore the Torah has to stress women's rights. First document to stress women's rights. In fact, the ketubah, the marriage contract, has nothing to do with the marriage. Marriage is valid without a ketubah. The ketubah is the financial arrangements. It's like a prenuptial agreement. Then the events of divorce, there's a certain lump sum given to the woman. Or the amount which is used for maintenance. In the events of divorce or in the events of the man passes away, the ketubah is a financial arrangement to protect the woman. So again, that's revolutionary. That's 2,000 years old. That's revolutionary. So what is sustenance? The Gemara says that a person, a man, should always be careful to try and provide sufficient sustenance for his household. Because lack of finance is one of the biggest causes of problems in a marriage. And this is till today. From those days till today, the Gemara says it's 2,000 years ago. Till today, the biggest cause of problems in marriage is finance. The biggest cause of arguments in marriage is arguments about money. You spend this, you spend that, I want to spend this. No, you shouldn't spend this, spend something else. Why not want to spend it something else? That's the biggest cause of shalom bayit problems. So therefore the rabbi said, you know what? Make sure you support your wife properly. Try and get a good job. Support her. In style, there'll be less fights, less problems. You know, today I'm not sure if that's so true anymore. I'm not sure. Obviously, there's a certain minimum, but there's no, the maximum, you see, there's a lot of divorce, even amongst very wealthy people. So I don't know how true it is, but there is a minimum amount beyond which a person can't live, in which case, they're going to divorce. They're going to separate. So money is the number one cause of couple conflict. And this is one of the secrets of Shalom Bayit, is to address the budget and come to a mutually agreeable conclusion of how much is going to be spent. Make a realistic budget between the two parties. Be realistic with your expectations and open up with your concerns. Are we saving enough? We want to buy a house, we want to save for the house, we want to need a new car, whatever it is. List the budget. Make a budget that you can both live by. Because a person's got to know that this is one of the major causes of friction between the two parties. Money. Emotional support. Now, we talked about financial support, but what about emotional support? And a person's got to realize that women need a lot of emotional support. Men also need emotional support. What is the emotional support a man needs? A man needs to feel loved. Like a baby. He needs a woman to come along and say, I love you. And I really care about you. A man is very weak inside. Looks very strong, but very weak inside. But a woman also needs emotional support. And the Talmud says a woman is easily hurt. And her tears are very easy to be caused. A person's got to be careful not to cause his wife to cry. And sometimes men can do it without even intending to. Just by saying the wrong thing. What do? What I say? I don't know. Triggered something. A flood of tears. I still can't understand it. I'm trying to figure it out. Can't figure it out. Men and women think differently completely. A woman needs emotional support. And a person's got to be very careful because not to cause emotional pain to his wife. Because she is more easily hurt. We see the babies and young children cry often. And sometimes quite hard. Even when the suffering is not so great. Right? You see a kid, maybe gets a little nick in their finger. Scream, shout. What do they want? They want attention. They want care. Once you give them care, and you go through the motion, you speak to them very caring, oh, my dear, what happened to you, my dear? They calm down already. Because that's what they want. And unfortunately, sometimes they just don't have any way to express their pain. So if a child screams and shouts, they use their tears to alert their parents to their physical and emotional needs. As they grow older and learn to cope with their little pains and discomforts, the frequency of their tears diminish. So it depends if they can start expressing what they need. Their relying on tears diminishes. But it's very important to know when there's tears, there's a yearning over there which is unexpressed. Someone is crying, it's a yearning which they find very hard to express in words. For example, the Bible tells us of the meeting between Joseph and his father. And the Torah says, and he cried on his shoulder. Doesn't say who cried on whose shoulder. There's a whole big discussion. As usual, we're Jews, we discuss who cried on whose shoulder. Torah doesn't say. And the conclusion the rabbis bring, Rashi brings down, that Yosef, the son, cried on his father's shoulder. Because at times, we lose words. You're lost for words. That's when a person cries. A person's lost for words. And usually, people are more emotional. They're the ones who can't express themselves. Because how do you express your emotions? It's very hard to express. So women cry more frequently than men. It's a fact of life. This does not necessarily reflect an emotional immaturity. It is because they are more sensitive and feel things more deeply. And it's something a man's got to realize. Men are more rational. Men have got to realize that women feel things more deeply and they're more sensitive. A few weeks ago, I was waiting my turn. Actually, when I was in Israel, in Yeshiva, and they had a public telephone before the internet and before the emails and before cell phones. You had to wait in line at a public phone. Have you ever been in a public phone in Israel? They put these simonim in before the cards. Had a little coin with a hole in it. Very unique coins in Israel. So Yeshiva only has one or two public phones. And everyone's waiting for a phone call. So there's a lineup. And they're all waiting to call their parents. They'll call their friends, whatever it is. So waiting over there, and I hear a conversation. Can't help it. There's a loud conversation going on. And it seems this man must have been newly married. One of the boys just got married. And he was obviously speaking to his wife. And I could hear the faint sound of her crying on the other side. And the young man was listening, and he was rolling his eyes in frustration. As if to say, oh no, there she goes again. So he's newly married. And she's crying. He doesn't know what to do. Why is she crying? Doesn't know. So there's a beautiful commentary called the Maharal. The Maharal was the Maharal of Prague. He was the rabbi of Prague. Everyone heard of the Golem. He was the creator, so-called creator of the Golem, Maharal. There's even a statue of the Golem in Prague. The non-Jews made a statue of the Golem in Prague. And there's a restaurant, the Golem. And there's a synagogue, the only synagogue the Germans did not destroy in Prague. Is the synagogue of the Maharal. Reputedly, the Golem is still sleeping upstairs in the attic. They were too scared to wake him up. They heard these rumors. They didn't destroy that synagogue. So the Maharal says that the tendency of a married woman to cry is because of the paradox of her situation. On the one hand, she has a position of power and prestige. She's the wife. She's the main woman in the house. I carry the bite. She's the main person in the house, the queen of the family. Beloved and respected by her husband and children. Important in her own right. At the same time, she feels dependent on her husband for emotional support. So catch 22. I'm the boss, but I'm dependent on him for support. So that's the dichotomy in her status. Makes her very sensitive to every word and gesture her husband gives. And men don't know this. Men don't know that a woman feels so sensitive to whatever he says. They don't know. Men don't know. I'm telling you, men don't know. Men walk in, men walk out as if, you know, make nothing. No difference. What I said, what I did, doesn't make a difference. If he says an unkind word to her or offends her in any other way, it upsets her equilibrium, causes her untold pain. Her husband's insensitivity can shatter her world. For this reason, the Gemara says, a person should be very careful with the affliction of his wife. So this is very important. And we have to tell newly marrieds and even people who are married already, like me, you got to keep on remembering how sensitive my wife is. A person's got to remember how sensitive their wife is. You go in, treat her with respect, say the right things, don't say the wrong things. How was your day? How's everything? Oh, you cook such a nice supper. A person shouldn't eat the food and say, How was the supper? Oh, supper? Oh, was there anything special? Did I miss anything? That's very insensitive, because the person may have spent a long time working on the food, and then the man comes and he says, nothing happened. So that's very important, to be sensitive, and we're going to talk a bit more about that. Love and honor. Talmud says, a husband must love his wife like himself, and honor her more than himself. The Rambam says he should be careful with her honor, because blessing is found in a home because of the wife. In other words, if there's success in the house, the success is due to the woman. But she brings blessing in the house. It's obviously a spiritual concept. It's not a... But what the rabbis are telling us is what my father-in-law told me, I think we talked about last week, is you'll only be happy if your wife is happy. And you'll only be successful if she's happy. Success and happiness go together. So a person may be very successful financially, but they may be very miserable because their wife is not happy. So success, we're talking about a bracha over here, is success is only due to the wife. If she's happy, the man will be very successful. The Rambam says, speak with her very gently and do not exhibit depression or anger in her presence. Now, a man's got to be very careful not to worry his wife. Say he's worried about finances, things going on in his job. Shouldn't come home and tell her. Should not come home and tell her. Why? Because she's very sensitive and she's going to worry about it. So you should try and minimize it and reduce what's going on, not to get her worried. Because a woman wants stability, a woman wants security. The man comes on and says, I'm going to lose my job, I think in a few weeks' time. You're berserk. What do you mean? She's worried about her security. And she's sensitive to situations. So a person's got to be careful, know how to tone things down, how to talk, and be very sensitive. Happiness. The Torah and Devarim, Deuteronomy chapter 24 says, a man should rejoice with his wife. Now there's two different ways of understanding this. The Torah says, V'samach et ishto, asher lakach. So does that mean he has to rejoice with her? Does that mean he has to make her happy? Debate. The Targum, Yonatan ben Uziel, says he should be happy with her. Rashi says he should make her happy. So one's easier than the other. Being happy with her is easier than making her happy. He's going to strive now. He's going to do the positive. Not just sit down and say, relax with her and say, my dear, how are you doing? How's everything? Are you happy? I'm happy with you. I'll be happy with you. A person has to go out of his way to make her happy. And the first year of marriage is extra special. The first year of marriage is the building block for the marriage. And therefore, they're not allowed to leave each other without permission. They have to stay in the same house for a year without going business trips and without taking this vacation and that. They have to be together all the time for one whole year. Solid, have a nice time together. Okay, so let's go back. We said before about the sensitivity to each other. Let's talk a bit about attention. And a woman is looking for attention from her husband. It's very, very important. A man must give attention to his wife. What she's wearing is very, very important. No, you got a person going to look. Huh?
That's not generalized. I mean, don't you think that...
I'm generalizing. Because this is a general thing. So we have to talk about general things. And someone asked me already what I'm talking about. I'm talking generally. It's very important to know. When I'm talking generally. And there are always... individuals who are different. I'm talking about the general case. I'm just telling you the sources. This is what the sources say. The sources say, generally, a man's got to be very careful to notice what his wife is wearing. In other words, if she dresses up, he should notice, because who's she dressing up for? Hopefully she's dressing up for him. She's not dressing up. I'm not talking about when she's just walking around, she's doing some housework. I'm talking about when she's dressed up. Say it's Shabbat, she's dressed up very nice. Say, wow, is that a new dress? You didn't notice for 20 years. I've been wearing this 20 years. What do you mean? So a person's got to notice. It's very important to notice these things. A man has got to notice, yeah. You?
Hard to believe that when you're in the house with them, they don't dress up, but only when you go out, they dress up.
Right, but even when they go out and they're dressing up...
would be they're dressing up for the public and not for you.
Okay, that's what it seems, right? But you have to judge, give the benefit of the doubt. And that is, if she's your wife, she's dressing up for you. And that, what does that mean? That means the way she dresses, it brings respect to you as well. Because even if she's dressing up for you indirectly, it's your wife, and therefore it brings respect to you. So it's very important. If she looks good, it's a good reflection on the husband. The husband looks good, it's a good reflection of his wife. And it causes fights both ways. Had a couple here. Her main concern was he wasn't dressing up well. It's a bad reflection on her. It is. Works both ways. And therefore, they both have to pay attention. Today, we pay attention about each other. Oh, you're dressing up so nicely today. You look so good. And compliments go a long way in marriage. The person's got to remember to compliment, not grouch. Usually, it's the grouches come out first. Why do you wear this? Why do you cook this? Why do you do that? What about the compliments? Compliments, compliments, compliments. The secret of successful marriage is honeydew. Honey, always the honey. Don't forget the honey. Honeydew. She puts on her dress and hopes for a good word from her husband. He doesn't see it. She doesn't exist. It doesn't matter if it's blue or green. She's going to be sad. She spent an hour choosing the dress. I don't know about you. Women just go into the store. They look around. 2 hours later, come out. What? No, you found anything? Nothing there. There's nothing there. Man goes in the store 10 minutes, comes out with a whole bag full of stuff. Woman goes in 2 hours, she's wandering around. What happened? What is she doing? There's nothing in the store. No, there's nothing in the store. Nothing suits me.
Waiting for it to go on sale.
Oh, no, that's the other way around. Usually they go on the sale, there's nothing there. So what happens? What is she doing? She's picking something very suitable. But the man, she comes home with the thing, she wears it. What do you think? Ruined her day. She spent 5 hours choosing it. Man's got to give compliments. It's a mitzvah to give compliments. She works hard to cook a dish that he likes. If he swallows it down in a manner that he can barely remember what he ate and doesn't compliment her for it, she feels cheated. You go to the restaurant, you know, compliments to the chef. The chef feels let down. No one noticed what I cooked today. Something special.
Yes.
Compliments are very important. Compliments. Don't be a blatant liar. Don't say it sarcastically. That's gonna. Look, if she likes it, I like it. And if you like it, she should like it. That's the way it should work. Something needs to be fixed in the house. He ignores it. She hangs a picture on the wall. Places a bouquet of flowers on the table. She does it all for him. He doesn't notice it. Looks around. Anything new? Can't see a thing. What? What's new? What? Tell me what. The picture over there. Picture? You bought a picture? Looks very nice. Looks great. That's the way to do it. Compliments. Looks good. Little by little, and this is something which causes deterioration in marriage. Little by little, she may feel her husband's ignoring her. Or he may feel she's ignoring him. He has a haircut, comes home. Didn't notice. What happened? You don't look, look. So, okay, you had a haircut. So now, so what? So what happens? People feel, little by little, no one cares. My partner doesn't care. Whether I look like this, whether I look like that, whether I dress like this, I dress like that, doesn't care. I come home, I fix the house, doesn't care. He spends hours painting the house, doesn't care. Not a word, not a compliment. What happens? They start feeling they don't care about each other. And little by little, what happens? Develops over time a distance and separation between them. Each one will live in their own separate lives. So he comes home, has his meal, does his own thing. She comes home, does her thing. They're living separate lives. And that's unfortunately, that's a lot of people today. Living separate lives in the same house. They're married, but really, they're not really married. They're married and not married at the same time. Yes?
So, in terms of someone's question about do you lie or whatever, it's really appreciation. It's not necessarily compliments, but it's acknowledging and appreciating.
Well, how do I look? How do I look today?
But let's say you have, like, my husband doesn't like the cooking, so it's kind of like reverse. Let's say he cooks a meal.
So I have to say, I like it, it's good.
But even just like, oh, thanks so much for...
Yeah, that's great.
Even if it's not like...
Yeah, thanks is a lot. Thanks is a lot. Thanks is an omission. You know, the word in Hebrew for thanks is todah. And the word todah comes from the word, root of the word lehodot, which is to thank you. Thank you or to admit. Same word. Lehodot is to thank and to admit. Because in essence, when we're thanking someone, we're admitting that someone gave them something. And it takes a lot to admit. We don't like admitting. That's why it's very hard to say thank you. Because thanks is an admission if someone did something for us. But it's very important. And let's talk a bit about these compliments and the lies and the truth. Because it's a famous debate in the Talmud. I mean, everything's a debate in the Talmud. Who is it? A debate between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Two famous schools of thoughts, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. And this Gemara is in Ketubot, page 17a. And the debate centers upon, you go to a wedding, and you see the bride, and Beit Hillel says, it doesn't matter what she looks like. She's, bride is always gorgeous. You always tell the groom, your bride is beautiful. Always. Doesn't matter what she looks like. You go to the groom and you say, you got the best wife. She's beautiful and she has good traits. Doesn't matter what her traits are like. She's beautiful and she has good traits. Beit Shammai says, you say it as it is. You're not allowed to tell lies. You say it as it is. The Torah says, midavar sheker tirchak. Keep away from a lie. Keep away from it, which means not only are you not allowed to say, you're not even allowed to go near it. Keep away from a lie. So Beit Hillel, how can you come along and say lies? So you know what Beit Hillel says? He doesn't answer with any quotes from any verses. He says, if a man buys something, should his neighbor come and tell him, you made the wrong deal. You paid too much. You paid too little. You bought the wrong color. Doesn't suit you. What should the neighbor say?
I'm happy for you.
That's what the neighbor should say. If it's an irreversible deal, why ruin his day? Why ruin his next few weeks? The guy's worried, I paid up too much for this thing. It's not good for me. It's a different color. I shouldn't have bought it. Make his day. So Beit Hillel doesn't answer with a source. Beit Hillel says, just generally, is the Torah about making peace between people? Is the Torah about complimenting people? Is the Torah about causing pleasure for people? Or is the Torah about causing pain? If the Torah is about causing pain, you're right, Beit Shammai. If the Torah is about causing pleasure, then I'm right. That's what he says. That's all he says. Doesn't bring any verses, doesn't quote any verses, doesn't quote any proofs. His only proof is logic. Logic is the Torah's bottom line is to cause pleasure. The Torah's bottom line is to cause pleasure. It's obvious you're allowed to tell a lie to make peace between a newly made wedding. Can you imagine? You go to the wedding and tell the husband, how do you marry her? She's so ugly. You're Meshuggah. What is Meshuggah? Beit Shammai says, you got to tell it as it is. You got to tell the truth. Come on. Every time a person says the truth, who says you have to say in the first place? Don't say anything. I have to go and say the truth all the time. But it's the truth.
He's on.
That's the way the path to hell is built based on truth as well. It's interesting. So there are two different values. Shalom and Emet. Truth and peace. What is the higher value?
Peace.
Peace is the higher value. For example, let me give you an extreme example. Person's hiding a Jew in his basement. Nazi comes knocking on the door. Any Jews over here? Sure, in the basement, right here. That's truth. Sometimes truth takes a vacation. Because it's a higher truth. Not like it's a lie, it's a higher truth. The higher truth is shalom. Shalom is a higher truth. There's different levels of truth. So Beit Shammai says, you say it as it is. Keep away from a lie. Beit Hillel says, the real truth is having a pleasant disposition towards people. And that is the halakha. That's the Jewish law is, you make peace. Tell the lie in a nice way. Say she's beautiful. Because that's what you're here for. You're here to cheer them up. You're not here to destroy. You're here to fix the wedding. You're here to cement the relationship. That's why they invited you. They didn't invite you to destroy the relationship. The issue presents itself repeatedly in marriage counseling. One party will say something mean, bullying, or offensive. That's why, before you even go to marriage counseling, I'm not a great believer in marriage counseling by the regular marriage counselors. Why? Because normally what they tell you to do is make a list of what you don't like and come with a list of what you don't like. I say come with a list of what you like and work on what you like. Work on the areas where you like. Because if you start working on the areas, I don't like this, I don't like this, I don't like this, I don't like this, what's going to happen? We're going to focus on the negative completely. What about the strong points? So at least come with two lists, the good and the bad. But don't just come with a list of bad. Because then things just get out of control. And then what happens? It becomes a bashing exercise. So we're going to talk about, that's my next class, about counseling and how to communicate. Because counseling really should be a lesson on how to communicate with each other. That's all. Not to bash each other. Sometimes it becomes a bashing. One party will say something mean, bullying, or offensive, justifying him or herself because it's the truth. That's not the truth. That's a lie. A lie is bashing someone. Because there's a high level of truth. The highest level of truth is peace. So anything which leads away from peace, it's a lie. It's verbal abuse. even though it expresses their true feelings. It's forbidden to hurt another person in any context. It's very hard to understand. It's forbidden to hurt another person in any context. I can't hurt anyone. I'm not allowed to hurt. So why am I allowed to hurt those closest to me? By saying bad words, by calling them bad names. I'm not allowed to hurt anyone. The Gemara is teaching us God's truth. It requires never being hurtful or nasty. Truth is being pleasant when it comes to other people and their feelings and their dignity. And we had a whole series about Derech Eretz. Yeah, being nice to other people, having Derech Eretz. And over there, the Talmud says, Derech Eretz Rabbah, chapter 4, it says, one should always be pleasant when entering and leaving, especially one's own house. Why? Because how do people remember a person by? It's interesting, very interesting idea. A person, the whole year round, has got a very good mood. 10 minutes that year, he had a very bad temper. And someone just walked in for those 10 minutes. How does that person view that person? All they know is that 10 minutes where the person was in a ranting and raving. That's all they know. Oh, that person! That guy's got a bad temper. Everyone else said, what are you talking about? Hey, I know him all. I've been here 9 months. Nothing. I didn't see a thing. This only person saw him 10 minutes. That's it. And those are the time. Those are the peak times. The peak times when you walk in and when you walk out. That's peak time. That's how people remember a person. When they walk in and when they walk out, especially one's own house, because that's when people remember you. Oh, they open the door. Hi. Dad, you came back from work. How are you doing? Lousy. That's very important. How a person walks in and how a person walks out. It's very, especially important. The Chazon Ish says, a man must let his wife know when he's leaving, where he's going, what he is going to be doing, and when is he going to be back? And if you don't say it, it's going to come out anyway. You might as well say it. If he goes away on a journey, he must every day phone or write a letter. In those days, you write a letter. Today, you send an email. And bring gifts. Very important to bring gifts back. Very important. Just the idea that I was thinking about you. It's also a good idea to carry one's spouse's picture around. And one's children's pictures. And show them that you're carrying them because to show them how important you are. So they feel, carrying. If I'm not with him all the time, at least my picture's with him. Yeah, he cares about me. He looks at my picture every day. It's very important. And again, I'm generalizing. The next value is prioritizing one's spouse. We talked a bit about this last week. Where do we learn it from? The Talmud says we learn it out from Abraham. In Genesis chapter 12, verse 8. The Torah says that Abraham traveled and he pitched his tent. And the word used for tent is ohalo. Oil is a tent. His tent is ohalo. But usually his tent has a vav at the end. Ohalo with a vav at the end. Over here it has a hey in the end, which is feminine. So Rabbi said, what do you mean he pitched his tent in the feminine? He's masculine. So Rabbi say he pitched her tent before his tent. She was the priority. He prioritized his spouse. And that's what the Torah is teaching us over here. That if a person needs to do something for himself and his wife, he should do his wife's needs first. And this will apply to all forms of help, respect, kindness, consideration. Whether practical or emotional, the wife comes first. Rabbi Yossi, in the Gemara in Shabbat, page 118, called his wife his home. He referred to his wife as his home. She is my home. Where do I live? This is my wife. She is my home. She was the one who made a house into a home. Who makes the house into a home is the woman. The woman transforms a house into a home. Person comes home and there's nothing there. What is it? Comes home. Empty house. Now, who makes the house into a home? The woman makes the house into a home. She's the main ingredient. She's the central figure. The home is the essence of life, and the wife is the essence of the home. And therefore, the wife is the essence of life to the husband. She transforms a mere building into a home, into a refuge from the world, where he may have fulfillment and independence. And the Talmud in Ketubot tells us how Rabbi Akiva's wife sacrificed everything for him. The greatness of Rabbi Akiva was due to his wife. She sacrificed everything to enable him to learn Torah. And it's a beautiful story of she was the daughter of a very wealthy individual. Her name was Rachel, daughter of a very wealthy individual. She was the only child of Kalba Sabua, one of the great millionaires of the generation. And she's waiting for all the suitors, they're all coming, she doesn't like any of them. She sees her father's shepherd, Akiba. This man has high intellect. He knows nothing about anything, but he has high intellect. He's very good with the sheep, he's very kind, very generous. So she wants to marry Akiba. And she makes a deal with Akiva. I'll only marry if you go and learn Torah. And Akiva's thinking, what should I do? What should I do? I don't know what to do. Marry her. How am I going to learn Torah? I'm 40 years old. What am I going to learn Torah? So he's sitting over there by the stream and says he saw a drip of water over the years and made a hole in a rock, a little dent in the rock. He says, if the water can make a dent in the rock over time, so too the Torah can make a dent in my head. Maybe there's hope for me. If water can make a hole in a rock, maybe there's hope for me. The Torah can penetrate my head. So he agrees. And when the father hears this, her father, he throws her out of the house. So from being a millionaire's daughter, she becomes destitute. And she and Akiva go live in a little hovel, reduced to nothing. He goes to work half day, he learns half day. And many years of suffering, after 24 years, he becomes the chief rabbi of Israel. 24 years of studying, at the age of 64, the time where most people retire, he becomes the chief rabbi of Israel. He comes back with 24,000 students. And they see this old lady who's trying to get in to see him. Her students push her away. Keep away, what do you want? And Rabbi Akiva says, my Torah and your Torah belong to this woman. Everything belongs to this woman. So that's a very important idea, and he gave her a lot of honor, and obviously she deserved it. But we see that sacrificing for each other and appreciation is very important.
Did her parents ever
come
around?
Did what?
Her parents.
I'll tell you the story. A very great story. Beautiful story. What happens? Rabbi Akiva comes back 24 years later, chief rabbi of Israel. He has a visitor. Who's the visitor? An old man, who happens to be his wife's father. But the father doesn't recognize his foremost shepherd. Chief rabbi of Israel, come see the rabbi. He says, Rabbi, I have a halachic question. So what's the question? He said, 24 years ago, I disowned my only daughter. He said, yeah.
Okay.
I disowned her because she married a shepherd. Now the truth is, I didn't really mind that she married a shepherd. I minded because he was totally ignorant. So I made a vow to disinherit my daughter. So the rabbi says, and if ignorant shepherd would today be a big rabbi like me, what would you say? He said, I would certainly annul my vow. He said, then you better annul it, because that's me, the shepherd. That was the end of the story. The money came back 24 years later. Everything came back. Wisdom, money. Yes, their children. Children were very... Rabbi Yehoshua, other rabbis came from that lineage. And so that's a true story about greatness giving between the couple. And lastly, and this is a topic which I'm going to expand on next week, is there's two forms of mediation. Well, when I say mediation, there's two forms of sorting out arguments between the couple. One is called arbitration, and one is called mediation. And what is the difference between arbitration and what is the difference between mediation? So there's two peaceful civil methods available to resolve conflicts, arbitration and mediation. We see this today usually with labor union negotiations. So the most likely case is mediation. When mediation fails, the government appoints, or the court appoints, an arbitrator. What's the difference between arbitrator and mediation? Mediation is the two people themselves come to some mutually agreeable conclusion. Arbitration is a third party hears both sides and rules down the verdict. That's arbitration. So now, in a case of marital difficulty, what's better? Mediation or arbitration?
Mediation.
Okay, so mediation always better. So a person's got to know, when they go for counseling, are they asking for arbitration or are they asking for mediation? If they ask you for arbitration, it's much simpler. Sometimes it's less divisive. You go to a third party, someone you trust. Say, you know what? I say this and she says this. We both agree to listen to you. Sometimes it happens to rabbis sometimes. A couple comes and say, the rabbi will decide. And the rabbi is in trouble because one of them is going to hate him after that. And usually what happens is they drop out of the synagogue after that. So the rabbi, if he's smart, will say, I don't do arbitration. I only do mediation. And if he's smart, he'll say, I'll send you to marriage counseling. So arbitration, two people present their arguments to a third party, sits in judgment, then hands out the compromise which must be accepted by both sides. Mediation. The role of the third party is different. The function of the mediator is not to suggest what the compromise should be, but to help the two sides communicate until they arrive at their own compromise. And this process may take longer than arbitration, but the resolution is more mutually agreeable as well as more permanent. Because it's arbitration, you know, for a while the other party might accept it. After a while the party might say, you know what, heck with it. I didn't agree. The guy was forced on me. I don't agree with it. So mediation definitely may take longer, maybe more painful, may cost more, but it lasts. If it's mutually agreeable, it lasts. And it's more acceptable. The mediation approach is particularly effective in helping couples overcome long-standing, seemingly irreconcilable differences with each other. And how is that achieved? By communication. The buzzword today, communication. Everything is communication. You cannot create a relationship without communication. All good relationships are based on communication. And the better the communicator, the better the relationship. That's usual. I had a rabbi who's a professor at Yeshiva University. He's a professor of education. He's a very old man. He's retired. He was a principal, retired principal. His name is Rabbi Dr. Feuerman. Feuerman, very, very interesting character. And he was an advisor to, I started a school. He was an advisor to the school, and we had problems with staff, and he would come in and talk to the staff, and then afterwards we discuss it. Say, what does she say? She said this. But what does she really mean? So now, this is really very important. Someone has a conversation with someone. Maybe it's a bumpy relationship, maybe it's someone who is not a very good communicator. They may say certain things, but behind it, a person's got to know what do they really mean. And sometimes people don't tell you what they really mean. They just say something. And they may have an agenda behind it. They may have certain feelings behind it. They may have an emotional idea behind it. And it's up to the person who's hearing the words to try and figure out what it means. But that's what it means by being a good communicator on both sides. A person's got to be a good talker and a good listener. It's very important today, because we like to talk, but we don't like to listen. And half the problems in marriage are caused by not listening. The other half are caused by not communicating, by not talking. So it's 50-50. A person's got to know to be a good talker, and a person's got to know to be a good listener. And this is a topic which I want to expand on next week. I'm going to spend an hour on practicing our talking skills and our listening skills. And sometimes, a person, all they have to do is listen, and they can cure the whole problem. Because the biggest feeling of discontent in a marriage is when a party feels that the other party doesn't care what I say. Doesn't matter what I say. Never listen to. It's one of the biggest gripes. Never listen to. So just by listening, a person can calm someone down. Yeah, I'm listening to you. How does a person prove they're listening?
Be able to repeat what they said.
Exactly. So repeat it back. Isn't this what you said? Huh. I was listening. This time he's listening. Repeat it back. And we're going to talk a bit about all the technical details about communication and listening. And that's a very important idea. Okay, we'll stop here. Any questions? Yes.
Can